This is Judy Dunaway, and we're in Amsterdam. We are talking to Hejin. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm a transgender woman from Amsterdam, but originally born in South Korea. I'm a Korean adoptee. I grew up in Belgium, and I've worked as a sex worker in Belgium and the Netherlands several years. Apart from that, I do activism on sex worker rights, mainly in Europe, though I have also these days getting more or less a network in Korea as well. Mm-hmm. And I also work on general sexual and reproductive health and rights, and specifically youth participation. And I'm a writer. I write poetry and other creative writing things. And I used to do performances just on my own, just creative performances with background music, some of my own writing. No singing, though, but trying to make something creative, but also political.
Could you tell us a little bit about your activism work here in Amsterdam? What organizations are you working with?
I don't do that much on local level, but I work at Prostitution Information Center with Petra and Mariska. And these days I've also been trying to lobby more or less with some political parties, specifically about the red light district in Amsterdam. But that's only recent, that I'm just trying to reach out to some parties, political parties in Amsterdam that are more or less positive towards sex worker rights, to see what their opinion is and try to influence their opinion, of course, as well. Mm-hmm. But mostly I work a little bit more outside that. Most of my work I do these days is through UACT, which is a European Youth Network on Sexual and Reproductive Rights. And it's located in Council of Europe countries with a network. The network is comprised of young people between anywhere of 18 and 28, active as well in their own countries on anything relating with sexual rights, reproductive health, and these things. And we work both on local level, so we will do little actions, for example, on Catholic World Youth Day, but we also lobby to the UNAIDS. We have somebody a member on the programming committee board of UNAIDS, and somebody on the Youth Council of, I think, Youth Council, its name, I don't know the name of that body specifically, of the UNFPA, and some higher level advocacy as well. And I'm the only sex worker in that network. It's a small network because everybody's more or less an active participant, so you're required to be active, otherwise you get kicked out. But I'm trying to, last year I've been working and trying to give them a link between sexual reproductive health and rights and also sex worker rights, because the network, even though it's not specifically about sex work or trafficking, deals a lot with trafficking and prostitution because it's a very hot item in Europe. So they encounter it a lot. And last year I've been taking care that UACT does not make any anti-sex worker rights statements or does not confuse trafficking with sex work, or is more conscious about the reality of sex workers, because through their work they're exercising a lot of influence, I noticed. Even though they're only a youth network, even though they're not that old, they're in pretty high places, and I just want to make sure they're not they're more doing good things than bad things. So that's what I've been busy most of the time is working in that network.
Yeah. You talk about the PVDA in your blog, which I guess is a political party.
Yeah, it's the Labour Party.
Okay. Is this the Conservative Party? Or are they're more liberal?
Well, they're a Labour Party. So my original idea would be that they're more or less liberal, at least more or less left-wing, and they are. But what you see is that they're more and more leaning a little bit to the center in recent year. I'm not entirely sure what their entire program is or what they do on national level in the Netherlands, but on local level in Amsterdam, some of the politicians from that political parties is leading a little bit of a crusade, I almost can say, against sex work. So that's why I deal with them, or at least that I talk about them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what their position is in the rest of the country, but in Amsterdam, some of the members of that party, which are in the city council, have been very, very moralistic if it comes to sex work even. So I guess they're still left and still more or less open-minded, but not so if it comes to sex work. It's a political party that usually is pretty good on the gay and lesbian issues and other issues, but seems to be a bit moralistic on this side, at least in Amsterdam.
Are the efforts of the PVDA influencing the situation about closing the windows? Do those politicians have anything to do with the third of the windows closing?
The PVDA is the major party in the city council right now. So our mayor is also from that political party. So of course they have a lot of influence. And they have been instrumental in using several laws that do not necessarily concern prostitution to screen some of the business owners financially and thus, trying to shut them down in that way. Initially, they said it wasn't about prostitution. It was about combating criminality, or it was about the fact that those businesses have to be financially sane, which is of course a good argument. But the law they're using is one that's so strict that they'll find something if they want to find something. They can simply use it to shut some businesses down specifically, because they'll just keep digging until they find something to use against that business. I never believed that it was about combating criminality. I always thought it was more about shutting down the red light district, specifically mm-hmm. because some of the members of this political party have been talking very loud against prostitution for quite a while. So I didn't really believe their argument that it was simply for to combat criminality. And now, more and more, I think it's clear that they're just trying to stop the red light district from... It can't grow anymore, but I think they're more and more looking to close it down, or at least chip away from the current size, and trying to contain it more and more by closing some of the windows, cleaning out some of the streets, and these things.
Are there rich businesses that want part of the red light districts? Is there gentrification? We call it gentrification in the U.S.
I don't necessarily see it as a money issue. I think it's more about morals. I think it's more about a conservative trend that's been showing up, or maybe not a conservative, maybe a little bit more a moralistic trend. One of the leading politicians who from the Labour Party in the city of Amsterdam, who's trying to shut down the windows, has a very strong moralistic position on it, and she doesn't keep quiet on that. Also because she worked behind the windows herself for a while, and she's using that as an argument that she thinks that the majority of the women are forced, that clients are not normal, that they shouldn't be doing this. So this very moralistic approach, and I don't want to discredit her experience that she might have had in the sex industry. We all have our experiences, but one way or the other, she feels justified in generalizing her experience over all other sex workers in Amsterdam, which is wrong from my point of view. But it also shows to me that this is not about money for her. At least for her, it's about morals. And since she's leading this fight against prostitution in Amsterdam, I think it's not necessarily money that's the driving force behind this. Their argument is simply that the red light district is not something to be proud of in Amsterdam. And I think that if the red light district shuts down, if windows, more and more windows disappear, a lot of tourism is going to disappear. That shows me that it's not about money, because the red light district brings also a lot of income to the, not only to the city, but to a lot of people who are not necessarily sex workers, like cafes, shop owners, even the cleaning lady who works in some of the places. There are a lot of people making money out of it that are not sex workers as well, and they're also going to suffer from this. So I don't think that money, gaining more money, is a driving force for them.
Well, how will this affect sex workers in Amsterdam? The windows closing, how will this affect the sex workers that are there now? What will they do?
Well, right now 70 windows are going to close. At least that's the plan. 70 windows are going to close, but it's still not 100% sure. Say it's 90% sure that those windows are going to be gone. Because they're being sold to a housing corporation, and the chance that the housing corporation is going to let them be windows is very, very small. That simply means that we'll be losing a certain number of working places in the city, and the women who used to work there, they either will try to find another window in the city, in one of the two other red light districts, or they'll have to move to either another city or to another branch of the sex industry. What it's also going to do, maybe to the rest of the windows, is just increase the rent, which then is not very good for the people who are still working in the windows that are left, because they have to pay more rent for the windows.
So if you're paying taxes and you're a sex worker, you're paying Social Security and unemployment. Will they get any unemployment from the government because of this?
People who work in the windows are officially independent business owners themselves. Okay. They have the same rights as any other independent business owner. So there's certain rights for some financial compensation if they would run out of work for a long time.
Okay.
But not necessarily the same unemployment benefits somebody would gain if somebody would be working for a boss. But I'm not 100% sure how it practically all works.
Is there any trouble with the police here as far as sex workers, or is it a fairly good relationship since everything's decriminalized here?
Well, I guess it's definitely a better relationship than in most countries in the world, but of course we still think they could be more polite and more respectful to our sex workers. The police, you know, most of the time is here to help you. If you're working legally, if you're paying your taxes, the police does not have any right to harass you, to arrest you, to beat you or anything. I mean, not that they ever have a reason to do that. They shouldn't, but here, at least, that's not happening all the time. So I think that's a good thing. But of course, police officers are still people with their own opinions and their own morals and values, which means that some of them might be quite disrespectful in times still, which I consider to be a big problem as well. Maybe a problem that does not seem so big for countries where it is a bigger problem. But from where I'm standing, that's sort of what I would consider the major issue with the police.
Is immigration and migration an issue for the sex workers here? How does it affect the business for sex workers who are citizens?
Migration is a little bit of a complicated issue since it's been legal. The current system does not allow for migrant sex workers from outside the European Union to work. It's the only kind of work that has this rule, which I think is mostly about trying to control who comes in and who doesn't. It's more about border control than it is about sex work or trafficking. What the result from that is that, of course, the people who are sex workers who are not from European Union, in the Netherlands, they're forced underground in illegal places. One of the things you get now is that you have a regulated industry which has to deal with all these rules and little regulations, which has to compete to an underground illegal industry, which is a lot less harassed with formalities because it's illegal, it's underground, it's criminal. And that competition has its effect on prices, on clientele, and these things, of course, as well. If it would be up to me, I would say, like, throw open those borders and you know, let everybody work. You know, yeah. Be able to work, have a good job, and you know, be able to work legally everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Of course, that's utopia. At least that's my utopia, if that would be possible. But in any case, I would sincerely hope that someday this government would realize that migrant sex workers from outside the European Union must have a chance to claim their rights and to be able to work in a legal and humane way. And when that happens, I think that would benefit the entire sex industry, not just the sex industry, but the entire society.
Yeah.
As well. It would put a group of people in a lot less vulnerable position, but also would improve on criminality and these things.
Do you want to talk about the situation for transsexual sex workers in Amsterdam? Is it any different than other sex workers? Or
being transgender in the sex industry gives you, of course, a different position than cisgender female sex workers or even male sex workers. I guess it's different in every country, and it also depends a little bit on the culture. But I've always felt that more or less, even in sex worker communities, there's a little bit of an hierarchy among sex workers. And being transgender often means that you're on the lower side of that than on the upper side of that. Also, from my own experience, I've faced added violence, you know, what you call violence, what you don't, but I've faced added problems on being a sex worker because you're transgender, because you're not just facing issues sex workers face, but you also have the issue of being transgender on top of that, discrimination related to your gender, which makes it not as easy, maybe. Not that sex work at all is an easy thing, but I always felt it sort of contributed to the discrimination you faced. And the same, I guess, is in Amsterdam. Even though there's a lot more openness about transgender issues, you still see that's mostly present in either more educated circles in society or in cities. So not the entire of the Netherlands is that necessarily that progressive. So as a transgender person, you can still feel, you know, a lot of prejudice and a lot of discrimination.
So what percentage in Amsterdam, what percentage do you think of the sex workers here are women and men and transgender.
I remember reading a survey that was done, I think by now 7 or 8 years ago, that quoted numbers like 5% is male and 5% is transgender. I guess there is some, I mean, around those lines, that's reasonable to think. But if people talk about 5% transgender sex workers, I always question, like, what is transgender in that case? Because people are, researchers always say, like, you know, they're transgender sex workers, but I always question, you know, are they transgender women or are they transgender men? What about transsexual women who had surgery or not recognizable as transgender? You put them with a woman, do you put them with a transgender? So you're never really sure.
Yeah.
And so I can't really say what I mean, I'm not very good at making the estimate, but I also question the idea of the 5% of transgender sex workers being very accurate.
I have a good friend who does transgender activism in Boston, and she said that before transgender rights, that sex work was the only work that some transgender people could get. Has that been true? Has that changed?
It's changing. I think, I mean, definitely the idea about transgender people and their employment options in the Netherlands, that has improved a lot in the last 10 years. That unemployment used to be around 90% of transgender people. They surveyed that, I think, 10 years ago and or more than 10 years ago. And right now it's around sort of 40%. So there's an improvement, but it's still quite different for transgender people than for the rest of society. So, you know, sex work is still an option that you're more likely to take as a transgender person, I think, than as another person in society. But I think it's on the improve in the Netherlands at least, because also here we have more or less reasonable anti-discrimination laws for that issue.
You're doing some activism in Korea now, right?
Mostly networking. As a Korean adoptee, of course, I have a link to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I went back several times just to visit the country.
Yeah.
And on one of my visits, I encountered several groups who were working on sex worker rights.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited to give a presentation on the situation in Amsterdam, but also on sex worker rights in general,
uh-huh.
because the entire concept of sex worker rights is very new in Korea.
Yeah.
It's not something that's been discussed very long. It's only since 2004 people have been discussing about what sex work actually is. And the majority of the people in Korea are very anti-sex work, and it's only like a small, I think about 10 groups, a very small number of people who are trying to present the idea of sex work being work. And in that visit, when I gave the presentation, I also met a sex worker group. It's called Minju Songnodong Cha Yonde. It basically is a democratic sex worker union. Union is not the correct translation, I think. I'm not sure. Well, it's the only group that is started and is led by sex workers in entire of Korea. And they're having a hard time because nobody wants to listen to them. They're currently operating from Pyeongtaek, which is near the United States Army base. And they've struck a deal with some of the business owners there for good working conditions, the right to refuse their clients if they don't like them, set, you know, a clear arrangement of 60% of the income goes to the sex workers, 40% to the business owners. And, well, very basic arrangements in order to, you know, improve the situation there, but also because sex work is criminalized there in a lot of places. There were crackdowns, etc. And business owners were taking advantage of some of the girls because of this situation. And they struck a deal with the business owners, sort of talked to them and asked for their support. And in that particular red light district, which also has windows, very surprisingly, they managed to make a good, more or less good working relationship, which still works. And I just come back from South Korea. And of course, because it's the most easy to find red light district, and it's the most well known because, not because it's the biggest or the most famous, but because there is this active group there. You see that the current city of Pyeongtaek is trying to shut it down through city replanning, and also because sex work is not legal, it's criminalized in South Korea. And just last year and also this visit, I just become more and more concerned with their situation. I see what they're facing. I see the troubles they're having. I come back now and I'm worrying about people I know there that are going to be without an income or going to be forced to work for business owners who are not so willing to let them have 60% or business owners who might be violent against them. And it just worries me that I have to do something about it. But it's just not easy because Korea is a very, it's very different than Europe. And Korea is also very centered on the idea of Koreanness, of Korean nationality. And as a Korean adoptee, I don't have as much room to call out and change people's opinions or to make a difference there. But then on the other hand, I'm probably, it's me and maybe one other sex worker ever who spoke out openly and told them they were a sex worker and tried to change the idea. I did notice that me speaking out, even though I'd never worked myself in Korea, I only worked in the Netherlands and in Belgium, of just saying that I'm a sex worker and that sex work is work and that people have to listen to sex worker did have an effect. And I'm trying to sort of continue to do that. I'm writing for a news, a sort of alternative news portal in Korea, a couple of articles about this. I've tried to do some interviews. I try to sort of more or less arise the concept of, you know, there's a sex worker that actually says that it's work, which is very new to a lot of people. Partially I can do that because I have the privilege of not living there and not having to make an income there and not having a family there. Because a Korean sex worker, if she stands out, she will probably be without an income, without family, and without a life. So I'm just happy that I at least could have contributed a little bit to a very starting sex worker rights movement in Korea.
Thank you, Haejin, very much for talking to us today and for talking to Sex Workers Internet Radio Lounge. Is there anything else? Final words?
The only thing I want to say is that if it comes to sex worker rights, we're facing a lot of morals and values that are very oppressive these days, but I don't think we should give up. I think we should keep fighting for what's rightfully ours, our rights and our lives.
This interview was conducted in November 2007. To get an update on Haejin, you can visit her blog at www.he-jin.blogspot.com. That's www.he-jin.blogspot.com. Special thanks to Stime Studios in Amsterdam for donating their facilities for this interview.
Copyright Judy Dunaway and Swirl. Please do not use without permission.